The purpose of the briefing would be to provide an overview of the trade consolidation of the MPS amendments. And we just gave a glossary of the acronyms that are being used on CWHNN, the National Child, Women's Health and Nutrition, NEC member of the Executive Council, Board of Department, Director General, Gazette National, and then trade consolidation of pregnancy. And the emphasis basically for this amendment is that the Child Contamination of Pregnancy Act of 92 of 1996 was not challenged during the court ruling that was given, and it was not found to be invalid. The amendments in 2003 were found invalid based on the fact that the judgment said Parliament failed to follow due process, and they said not because there is a problem with the contents of the amendment. And the Child Contamination of Pregnancy Act, as amended, remains a valid act. And decisions which were made in accordance with the act continue to be valid until the 17th of January 2008. And again, continuing with the emphasis, that challenge is about the procedure that had to be followed, and there was a need for proper public consultation, which is the process that we went through up to the National Chamber of Provinces, and that the judgment upholds democratic principles, in that consultation is an important principle of democracy, and that's why public consultation was important, and that the remedy is for Parliament to comply with those democratic procedures, and once those have been dealt with, we could proceed. And again, under the emphasis that the challenge and subsequent judgment is not about challenging a woman's rights to a termination of pregnancy or targeting the substance of the amendment or the principal act. Abortion care trained nurses are to render first trimester terminations of pregnancy, and provisions for greater provincial control and implementation were the main thing in the amendment. And that's basically what the amendment was about, to deal with issues like that. Firstly, to empower the members of the Executive Council to approve facilities in their respective provinces. Secondly, to exempt facilities that already provided a 24-hour maternity service, and there's a process to do that. And to make sure that recording of information was correctly done and submission of statistics was followed accordingly, and to enable the members of the Executive Council to make regulations. Fifthly, to provide service, health service providers in the abortion care to include trained registered nurses, because in the principal health it was midwives and doctors, and then to deal with the penalty clause. So I'll go through the sections that are going to be amendment one by one. Firstly, section one, there was a definition of what head of department is and what the member of the Executive Council, and definition of registered midwives is qualified with the need for prescribed training, and that's the important thing, that even if you're a registered midwife, we needed to qualify what the prescribed training was going to be and the importance thereof. An additional definition of registered nurse, which is also qualified with the need for prescribed training. And section two, that would be substituting section three of the principal act, that's the act 92 of 1996. And it specifies 10 requirements for approval of termination of pregnancy. And then subsection 3A, there would be automatic approval of current facilities that provide involved maternity services, I mentioned earlier, if the 10 requirements were met. And those are specified very clearly in the amendment. And then subsection 3B, that places the duty on the person in charge of whatever facility it is to notify the member of the Executive Council of the health facility and its provision of termination of pregnancy services. And that's all that was dealt with under section 2. Again, the member of the Executive Council has to submit statistics of approved facilities once a year to the minister, the national minister. And that was clarified. The minister is not divested of the power to perform any of the functions to achieve the objects of the act. And this is very important, because even though the MECs were being given all these powers, the minister was not divested of the power to act in case anything needed the minister's intervention. And then section 3, the person in charge of a facility that performs termination of pregnancy has to relay information to the head of department, that is at provincial level. And then the head of the department would then collect all that information and relay it to the national director general. And section 4, the minister and the director general at national are replaced by member of the executive council and head of department respectively. So basically that's what was being changed in section 4. And the delegation of power by the MEC and the head of department is dealt with in that section. Section 5, the member of the executive council has power to make regulations, and that was what was in this in that section. And the regulations would be made in consultation with the minister. And this is still part of not divesting the power from the minister. So that will be done in consultation with the minister so that everything is aligned and nothing is actually taken out of context from problems vis-a-vis the national minister's involvement. Section 6 deals with the offenses, and it describes what offenses should be prescribed for anybody who offended. And the new offense that is being dealt with in section 6 is that terminating or allowing termination at a facility that is not approved would mean whoever is in charge of that facility or whoever performs that termination in that facility could then be charged with an offense. And then section 8 deals with transitional provisions that are introduced in the Act, and facilities that are already designated would automatically be deemed to be approved in terms of the new legislation. So if there was a facility, say, in province, in the Northwest province that was already functioning as a facility where termination of pregnancies could be done, it would automatically be assumed to be approved in terms of the legislation. And any other new facility that would come online would then have to satisfy all those 10 requirements that I mentioned earlier. And that's basically what it was. There wasn't anything else other than changing those parts of the principal end that I researched. And I don't know if there's anything else from the legal side.
Is there anything to be added? If not, thank you very much for the presentation. It was short and brief. We'll now allow members to interact. Honorable Salia? You're asking to say so that you can answer some of the and make some of the clarities. Honorable Talia?
Okay, thanks. I would like to revert now to regard to ask about the public consultation. Has that happened following the court? I'm just going to have a dream that following that would have had it happen here in the NA and the NCOT. I just need to know what.
I don't think that affects the NA, mainly the NCOP, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Is there any other question?
Because that was a technical aspect.
Yeah. I agree with you. Honorable Dudley, and then Waters.
Thank you. The NCOP returned the amendments due to procedural issues, which were taken care of. but that those procedural issues, those hearings, did not have to concern themselves with the content. So my question to you is, are you saying that the court then was expecting the NCRP to hold hearings while ignoring what the position was? Because I'm not quite understanding that.
You wait until we've taken quite a number of questions. What is?
I would just like to know, after the NCRP had the public hearing, did they make any additional amendments to these to the original amendments? If you know what I mean. After hearing what the public had to say about these amendments, did they actually listen to them and make any additional amendments? If so, what amendments did they make?
Thank you. Honourable Mashila?
Yeah, thanks. Mine is in relation to Section 5. The regulations to be made by the MEC. It is said now that it will be in consultation with the minister. I kind of wanted to know the exact meaning of that. Whether it means that regulations can be made while consulting the minister, whether the minister agrees or doesn't agree, as long as it's been consulted, the regulations will unfold, or whether it will be only, the regulations will only be effective after the minister has actually either given a go ahead. What is the actual content of consultation?
The first one was about process, whether NCOP followed the process. The process of consultation, I guess, had to be followed for us to be at this point now. And I assume that has been dealt with, Madam Chair, completely for it to have come to the national, to the parliamentary portfolio committee right now. And my answer would be it has been dealt with. And the adequacy thereof, unfortunately, I cannot judge. And I don't know if the honourable member would have got all that process, but for it to have come here, I assume that process, the parliamentary process, had to be followed. And if it wasn't followed, I think it wouldn't have come up to this point.
You speak about the court having returned the bill so that the process needs to be followed. So what I'm asking is, and then you say that it has nothing to do with the content.
Okay.
So what I'm asking is, are you saying that the court was expecting the NCRP to hold hearings while ignoring what the submissions were?
Well,
with my intention of...
My interpretation from policy is that if the National Chamber of Provinces went back to follow this process, it would be on them to see what issues would be coming up in relation to the amendments. And the amendments are specifically what I referred to. So anything that was outside the amendments per se, I guess it would be the decision of the chamber, and my legal colleague can help in that respect.
Are you coming in now? Thank you.
Thanks. The bill was introduced in the NCOP as if it's a new bill. So all the issues that were in the bill as submitted to the NCOP were kind of considered, and incidentally, there were issues that were raised in the different provinces for the department to respond to. So the bill was dealt with as if it's a new bill. All the issues encapsulated in the bill, all the policy encapsulated in the bill was dealt with like any other new bill.
Okay.
So I guess what my colleague was trying to bring forward was that the decision of the Concord was based on the process, not on the policy in the bill. So what was found to be wrong was the policy that was followed. But that did not mean that when Parliament was reconsidering the bill, it should not consider the policy encapsulated in the bill.
Follow up?
Yes, it was also my understanding that it was introduced as a new bill. Now, the NCRP was the place that it was introduced as the first
time.
So if it was reintroduced as a new bill, it would then now have to come for the process to start up again here. So we would need to now follow through on the process of hearings and whatever at some point because of it being a new bill.
I'm not very well versed with the process of Parliament, but what I'd like to confirm is that in direct response to Honourable King's question, is that all the amendments themselves, this is the first time we have come to Parliament. The first two times in 2014. And that was because I'm trying to interpret for myself the fact that this must have been part of the consultation that was taking place. And that the first time we came to re-present the amendment. And the second time we were coming because there had been a consultation process in the province. And the members had brought to us for interrogation and for discussion what had been picked up in their consultation that the next provincial had. And now, and then we had relayed responses to those. And now we can present it. And now we have come again. Now, I think in response then to Honorable Gashi's concern, and I repeat, I'm not well versed in parliamentary processes. I would imagine that even if that had been done, if the amendments had been treated as a new bill, at this point, then those consultations had been finished. And therefore, it's rather the end of the process rather than the start of the process.
Let me give Honorable Dudley to.
Because the cost to Parliament in terms of having those returns and report cases and the fact that it appears on the surface of it that as it has been reintroduced as a new bill, that the full process would have to then be gone through, and that is that it would have to come here as a new bill, and not the process would need to start again. So I think what we need to request is that we get all the legal advice that we can from Parliament, because at the end of the day, Parliament will put the bill if this goes back to court.
On what has been raised by Honourable Dudley, can the legal team respond to what he just said? Or you think what you have said is suffice?
Yes, I think what I have said suffices, except to say that the process, in fact, yes, the process was followed, this process was followed as a result of the meeting that was held with the chairperson of the NCOP and legal advisor, the chief legal advisor, and it was then agreed that we are going to start the process to know in the NCOP and then move it to the NCOP. With regards to court, I'm really not sure because it's not a departmental. I'm not sure if I'll be saying this correctly, but it's not a departmental process. Now it's in Parliament. I think because of the SOP's failure to follow process, it was not taken.
Do you think? Want to pursue the matter?
Well, Chair, what I wanted to say was that we are a separate chamber for NCRP,
and we have to do our job, you know, in choosing the NCRP, and therefore, in order to give the due consideration to these amendments, I would strongly suggest that we have public hearing.
Come again?
I would strongly suggest we have public hearing.
Oh, sure. Honourable Machine?
I'm definitely having a different view to that. I would recommend, Chair, that we apply our mind and make the necessary consultation. And we cannot behave as if we are forgotten the history of the people. And I think that everything is starting afresh. And I would recommend that we apply our minds and make the necessary consultation in Parliament on the process that we must take forward. And maybe communicate that to the next commission. Not to take any position on the process now.
Honourable Dudley, still on the same issue?
Yes. Just on that point, in view of that Dr. Fuller's judgment, it's very clear that the courts are not opposed to sending the bills back if they don't feel the process has been fully followed. So I think we do need to consider seriously that we may be in a position right now where we do have to have those hearings, and I think we need to get very clear legal advice and from Parliament themselves, because they, at the end of the day, will be the ones who need to
As I said in the beginning, we are not going to take any decisions in this meeting. We are here to get the briefing, and we'll apply our minds when we are on our own dealing with the bill as it's presented to us today. Who was next?
Yes, I thought another member's question was that you wanted the NCOP procedure as well.
No, I wanted to know, since the public hearing, what new or additional amendments did they make? Once they heard what the public had to say, did they actually make any amendments to the amendments or anything like that? And if so, which ones? What are they?
I wouldn't, from policy side, know what that process was, but all the meetings that Mrs. McDowell has indicated that we attended, and where mandates from the provinces were dealt with at NCOP level, that there wasn't anything additional that came up, and I don't know if they dealt with it in their midst and to take the process forward. And basically, I don't think I'm qualified to give that answer.
Did
you
change
your
answer?
No.
So you can't get the answer, you get for a briefing.
Can this question be answered so that we can be satisfied? Over to you, sir.
Chairperson, the bill as submitted, that's the bill as approved by the NCOP. So in the processes that we followed, I can't remember of any new infections or any amendments that were made.
Okay. So no new amendments have been made. Are you satisfied? Thank you very much. Over to you, Machine. Yes, question.
The other question was from another member about Section 5. Basically, Section 5, and I think the consultation process with the minister by the MEC is simply to make sure that there is no malalignment in whatever regulations are coming up, as suggested by the MEC, with what the minister might be having in mind. And I think it's all in the spirit of cooperative governance. And that's my interpretation.
What I was asking actually is that within that particular provision, if we have an arrogant MEC in one particular province, can that MEC just go ahead with the regulation, even though that the minister is not happy about that? Or does that particular provision actually require that the minister must give a go-ahead of those regulations to be implemented? That's the fact that I just wanted to get clarity on this.
Well, my and I'm giving it as a non-legal person.
Okay.
We'll get the legal interpretation. My interpretation is that for any regulation to come into being, the MEC, arrogant or otherwise, would have to consult with the minister. And in that process of consultation, there has to be a middle ground. And arrogance aside, there will be a middle ground. And the minister is not divested of her powers to be involved with the act.
Any addition?
Maybe just to add, Chairperson, this section was meant to accentuate Section 25 of the National Health Act, which requires the NEC to implement quality in line or in accordance with policies of the National Health Act. And in case, maybe to respond directly to the latter part of Honorable Mashile's question about MEC, who is going to have his or her own regulation. There is a section in the Constitution, Section 146, which deals with conflict, where national has to supersede or take, where the legislation of national will take prevalence over that of the government.
Thank you.
Those are all the
questions. Yes. We now proceed to the second round. Honorable Madam.
I think we don't want to belabor this point because the concern relates to the consultation means consultation. It means what it is. If I consulted you, we are not in agreement, then I proceed. Because I complied with the spirit in the letter of the law. Now, I think the concern that he has, though he may define it as arrogant, it does mean that the MEC will do what he deems best in the interest of this province, his province, or by virtue of his executive committee. We know that even in the intergovernmental relations, as currently, you have provinces that do their by and large their own thing, and there is difficulty at the center to manage the processes in the province. I'm thinking I think Comrade Mashile is raising this particular matter in that particular context, you see. But I think to an extent, the fear has been, or the concern has been addressed by the last response, you see. But I think he probably, myself, would have felt much better if it could be somehow more tightly, I can say, consultation and approved, something like that. You see, that would have given ourselves a better sense of, you know, there is a oneness. You see, there's no room for maneuvering. But as you said earlier, we are not making decisions here. So these are questions that we are asking, and we are actually thinking out loud. But if we can tighten up that to prevent this concern, it would be a very, very good thing.
Any more questions?
The way that I'm seeing it and the way that I've heard is that there's two possible core challenges here. And the one is in terms of where you can have hearings without targeting substance, without looking at the content. And the other is because of the new goal, once it comes to the NA, that we will have to go through the full procedure. I'm actually speaking out of knowing that there are institutions and organizations who are preparing to challenge on those issues. Mm. So we are well advised to do something.
Thank you. I think that relies on us as parliamentarians going through the parliamentary procedure. It doesn't affect the department as such. So we'll deal with that on our own when they are no more here. We only need their briefing today, and then we'll deal with all the technical things in our own meetings from now. If there are no more questions, I think We thank you.
I hear the position of change. You said we have to wait till next week and we'll decide if we have public hearings or not. But according to the briefing, we've got till the 17th of January.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we wait till next week, it's the 22nd of October already. Mm-hmm. And if we do decide to have public hearings, which I'm assuming we will, you've got to get 2 weeks' notice. And then, you know, and so that takes us into November. We close on the 15th of November.
Mm-hmm.
As problem. So I think we need to, sort of make a more urgent decision.
Mm-hmm. If not, yeah, I agree with you. Mm-hmm.
If you want to get it through before we close,
mm-hmm.
if not, then it's fine, then we'll discuss it in March.
Mm-hmm.
That's the constraints you're under.
Mm-hmm. Good. We will come to that, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. If we are through, no more questions, so we have to thank you very much for the presentation. We can proceed now to the second grouping.
Establishment of an interim council with a 3-year lifespan and then a permanent one. A traditional healing should be confined to the private health sector initially, and proposal of four categories which will comprise the traditional health practitioner council, that's the herbalist, Iyanga, Sangoma, the diviner, traditional birth attendant, and traditional surgeons in Rwanda. And the proposed functions of the interim council would be to register all qualifying traditional healers, promotion of training, research, and professionalism in the sector, developing an ethical code of conduct, and maintaining discipline within the profession. Setting up of norms and standards with regards to the practice of traditional healing, regulating the issuing of medical certificates and health levels, facilitating cooperation among traditional healers, medical professionals, and the government. For a synopsis of the consultation process implemented by the Department of Health, it started with MINMEC, the then MINMEC, which is now the National Health Council, a meeting of 2000, which endorsed an establishment of the interim council for traditional healers. Then a forum which would give input in drafting of the bill by the Department of Health was established. And this is a forum of traditional health practitioners. And the composition of the forum was as follows, and it still is: 9 traditional healers nominated by the traditional healer provincial representatives, which means one per province, 5 members nominated by the Department of Health, and social of the forum is holding people. The role of the Department of Health in the development of the bill. Firstly, the department conducted provincial roadshows to inform traditional healers and other stakeholders about the contents of the bill. Presented the draft bill to the portfolio committee in September 2002, published the bill on the 11th April 2003 for a period of 3 months for public comment, and then there was a lot of input from the various other organizations in terms of comments. The Allied Health Professions Council of South Africa gave comments. The Eastern Cape Provincial Traditional Healers, Traditional Health Practitioners, Free State Traditional Practitioners Forum, Housing Traditional Health Practitioners Forum, Institute for Democracy in South Africa, IDASA, KwaZulu-Natal Traditional Health Practitioners Forum, Northern Cape Traditional Practitioners Forum, Traditional Healers Organization, South African Medical Association, and the Spiritual Healers Group. A tabling of the bill in Parliament. Public hearings were conducted by the Portfolio Committee on Health in August 2004. Bill was tabled and accepted by the National Assembly on the 9th of September 2004. The bill was debated in Parliament in November 2004 and passed. The bill was signed by the President on the 11th of February 2005 as the Traditional Health Practitioners Act, Act No. 35 of 2004, and was gazetted in Government Gazette No. 27275. A proclamation of Section 7 of the bill. The President proclaimed Section 7 of the bill, which empowered the Minister to appoint members to the Interim Council for Traditional Health Practitioners in accordance with pertinent regulations. The nomination for appointment. The process for appointment of members to the Interim Council was laid out in Government Gazette No. 29034. The adverts for nomination of members were published on the 6th, 7th, and 8th of August 2006, and the launch of the Interim Council was projected for the 31st of August 2006. Now, the ruling of the Constitutional Court on the Traditional Health Practitioners Bill. On the 17th of August 2006, the Constitutional Court handed down judgment in an application by the Doctors for Life based on the argument that there was insufficient public involvement in processing the bill, of course, with three other bills. The Traditional Health Practitioners Bill was subsequently declared invalid, and a period of 18 months was given by the Constitutional Court during which due consultative process could be done. For a brief resume of the bill is comprised of the following. Chapter 1, which is primarily definitions, purpose, and application. Chapter 2, establishment and governance of the Traditional and Practitioners Council. Chapter 3, registrar, staff, and registration procedures. Chapter 4, disciplinary inquiries and investigations by the Interim Council. Chapter 5, general and supplementary provisions. Application of the bill. The bill applies to traditional health practitioners in the Republic and traditional health practitioners and students engaged in the learning of traditional health practice in the Republic of South Africa. Inputs from the House of Traditional Leaders. Now, this was a new development which came up during the subsequent consultative process with the NCOP. Now, we received a lot of inputs, amongst others, definitions of categories of traditional health practitioners. They asked some questions. In particular, they were looking at the spiritual healers, if they should be categorized as traditional healers. Education and training of traditional health professions and registration of students. Universally accepted norms and values. Representation of traditional leaders in councils and requirements for registration. briefing in terms of provincial legislation. There were briefings regarding the acceptance of the bill, which were done in Northwest, in Gauteng, Free State, and KwaZulu-Natal during August 2007. Now, in view of the fact that this was the maintenance at a specific period of all the provinces, the department should participate in some and not all of them. But however, this happens throughout the country. Public hearings done in all provinces in preparation for the proclamation of the bill. Nomination of members to the interim council. The process of calling for nominations for the establishment of the interim council will resume pending the acceptance of the bill. Now, we had actually just started calling for nominations and we received quite a bulk of nominations at the time the constitutional court ruling came to be. So we just halted abruptly at that time. So the old nominations will not be used. We are not sure if the nominees, as well as those who nominated them, you know, still feel the same after a lapse of 18 months. Updating members of the Forum of Traditional Healers. Now, the department convened a stakeholder meeting to update traditional health practitioners in the provinces through the members of the Forum on the 13th of September 2007. The feeling was that before we resume the consultative process as requested by the NCOP, there's a need to bring the Forum on board so that they know exactly what is happening and so that they reactivate the consultative process with their membership in the various provinces. A parliamentary briefing received by the Department of Health were done on the 11th and 17th of September, respectively, to the Select Committee on Social Provinces. And in conclusion, I would say the period of suspension of the bill ends in February 2008, pending the completion of outstanding process. I thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mtalosa, for the presentation. I think we'll now give the members the opportunity to interact with the briefing. Honourable
Chair. I wasn't, Honourable Kevin and myself are new on the committee. This bill is emanated from the NCOP, so we also haven't had public hearings as a committee of these amendments. Am I correct?
Come again?
We haven't had, as a committee, portfolio committee, we haven't had public hearings on the amendments.
No.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
Thank you.
Just the same input I gave on the other bill would relate to this one as well.
Yeah. Chair, my question of clarity, of course, is in relation to the nomination. You know, it's, given the difficulty of nominating a veteran and making sure that you get the person's acceptance of the nomination and forwarding the nomination to the relevant board, it is a difficult task. Now, the understanding I'm having, because the suspension of the bill, as I've been briefed now, it was not on the basis of the content of the bill or the bill itself, it's about the process of consultation, which means the basis of asking those nominations still there. And I just want to clarify, what would be the problem of the department checking the availability of those people that have been already been nominated, rather than just blankly subject the whole process of nominations from scratch and end up making people angry that they don't even think about making the nominations again? What will be the problem with the department changing the availability of those that have already been nominated so that then they can be informed that they are still existing and accepting the nomination, then the process must be open to new ones rather than just scrapping everything and That's okay. I just want to know what would be the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Any other question? Pardon?
The question I want to raise also has nothing to do with it. But where the legal status of the book currently is. It is a question though, is that if the president assented to the bill in February 2005, and nominations were called only in August 2006, why such a long delay of really 14 months between assenting to the bill and then implementing, proclaiming the section of dealing with the nomination, as I said, I'm calling for nomination so long after the bill is already been awarded to the legal status, that doesn't make good sense there. But I for one would assume that in the consultation with the department to the minister had with the sector, the forum on the 13th of September, there was probably discussions around whether to start to call for nominations afresh. Because I think the sector has to be involved, otherwise there could be another fallout if we ignore the nomination that has been made already.
In the absence of other questions, then I give this over to you, Dr. Lewis.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. Regarding the nominations, the difficulties that have been raised by the Honorable Member, in fact, even the last speaker, regarding why we have decided to start the nomination process de novo. The fact of the matter is, like for instance, some of the people who were nominated, some of them have actually changed residence and changed provinces. They no longer live where they used to live because we are in contact through the forum of traditional health practitioners. We are in contact with the membership in general. And then secondly, the nominations that we did then were on the basis of an act that was valid, having been proclaimed and assented to by the president at the time. But when the constitutional court ruling came to be, then all things had to stop. And sometimes we wondered if the actual nomination process, which was in all the newspapers, in many newspapers at the time, didn't trigger the protest that led to the constitutional court ruling. So the instruction that we received from the department was that we hold all activities relating to the Traditional Health Practitioners Act at the time, and the feeling was that whatever we do thereafter will be dependent on the Act being reinstated after February 2008. So this is why we felt, we wonder in terms of the validity of the nominees that were presented to us then. And what I must also say, in the interim, the process of nomination actually evoked a lot of interest from people who do not necessarily qualify to be members of the current traditional health practitioners based on the Act. And a lot of people were actually nominating themselves. It was not going to be an easy process to actually get the people who were genuinely nominated by the members of the forum of traditional and traditional. But I don't think there is a problem on our part, because we have kept all those nominations intact revisiting them and checking one by one in terms of availability of the people that have been nominated. But the feeling was that once the act is re-enacted, we will start de novo, doing the nomination, establishing the council, et cetera, et cetera. I think that that is about all. And I assume the questions from the honorable members, the first and the second question, have been dealt with regard to the ETOP that was presented by my colleagues.
Yeah,
and then the honorable colleagues.
Yeah, Comrade Chair, I understand the explanation. And I understand the status of the bill at one time in the act, that the instruction was to sort everything. But you see, the nominations is actually in relation to the constituents, and the constituents is still the same. The constituents is still the same, and the new nominations that we require will be asking them from the same constituents, that is the future meeting. 2, 3, and 5. That's why one was not checking that the department, whether it's not possible that they actually relook at that thing. It should not be a copy exercise, you know. You should check the availability of those that are there and those that confirm their mission, and then to be regarded as valid. I think it will have a positive impact on the constituents.
I have a different view with regard to the nomination. If the whole process and the bill as a result was subsequently declared invalid, then it also stands that the nomination process, which is part of the employee survey, is also invalid. So we look at that very carefully, then we don't kind of, you know, revoke something that has already been declared invalid by the court. I would like to know, the criteria for nomination, is that located in the regulations? Because I don't see it in the list now. And does it preclude, because you've got four categories, does it preclude, or does it sort of say that so many from this category and so many from that category to make up your confirmation? Because if you're looking at your council of nine, that means one from each province, certainly some people who are only scored in one category may then say that we are, you know, not represented adequately. That is just maybe one from clarity.
Chair, does this all deal with the registration of traditional and alternative medicine? Before somebody is a registered traditional dealer, before they can administer particular traditional medicine, would it have to go to the NCT for clinical trials to prove, you know, that it's not harmful to people? And just take us through that process. How are you going to please that, if I'm going to put it that way? Thank you.
Over to the cover.
Firstly, the criteria for nomination are actually dealt with in the bill. It's a pity what I presented in the summer of the usual. But in fact, the total membership of the traditional health traditional council, the interim council, will comprise of 22 people, not 14. 14 is just the forum. That was elected then in 1999 to oversee the issues leading to establishment of the council. But when you look at the actual act, it specifies so many people belonging to the four categories, which may actually overlap with the subsequent question, the four categories that were approved then. And then also the issue of other people of alternative medicine. Now, this case does not intend to to introduce people of alternative medicine. Alternative medicine has got its own council and its own act. The Allied Health Professions Act are those people who are actually dealing with alternative medicine. This act is primarily for the African, indigenous, South African traditional health practice. So it actually does not relate to those other people. But otherwise, the criteria for nomination are actually spelled out in the act itself. And also, one of the things that I mentioned in the presentation was presentations from the traditional leaders of South Africa. Now they asked if they could be presented in the act, and this is the letter that we dedicated in subsequent meetings of the portfolio committee, whether we make one person part and parcel. I don't think there is any harm. The reason we're for 22 is the whole process of streamlining councils in the country as a whole. And there is no harm in having a council between 22 and 25 members, not necessarily bigger. So that could be debated when that time comes.
Thank you. Thank
you. It's obviously good to see the input from the traditional authorities were included. But there were other issues that came up during the hearing which haven't been mentioned, obviously, in your presentation. So I'm just wondering how, you know, whether those, whether you were retaining those issues, and they were also around things like traditional remedies, the content being disclosed, safety issues, testing, and training standards being developed and guidelines being developed before we proceed with the registration of people. And I'm not picking up anywhere that those things were particularly looked at, and they seem to me to be very relevant to what we do.
The question of the Honourable Waters.
The registration of medicine in clinical trials.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The issue of traditional medicines or remedies is not necessarily part of this thing. In the Department of Health, there is a new directorate, which is called the Traditional Medicines Directorate, which deals with the actual medicines, and it's quite, there's a lot of work that has gone on in that particular directorate. We, in my directorate, we are dealing with the practitioner as a professional person, like other health professionals. But they actually don't fall under us, who deal with professional liaison. They fall under the pharmaceutical cluster, which deals with, which is comprised of pharmacists in Greece. So the director that deals with the medicine actually belongs in another cluster, and it is regulated differently. They are also part of the MCC, but it's not in terms of this particular bill that we are debating today. I'm sorry, I need responding to that particular question initially. Now, with regards to training standards, the Act actually looks at the training of traditional healers, which is of a traditional nature. It is of an apprenticeship type of training, rather than going to a school and a technical and a university where you get a certificate. Now, traditional training is an apprenticeship kind of training where the student sits with the principal or the master or whatever category for a given number of years, minimum of about 3 to 6 to 7 years or even more. That is how it happens. So it can't be equated with the way you treat a pharmacist or a doctor or a nurse.
Are you satisfied with the answer?
For clarity, and in a few weeks, I've voted on the committee since June, so I might be asking obvious questions. But you said that the traditional medicine store, which is another barrier, which I understand, is not part, he's not dealing with it. But surely if you're going to have traditional health practitioner store, will the traditional medicine store come into being at the same time? So there's a legal framework for the registration of alternative medicine, or not? Or are we going to be registering traditional healers without sort of policing the medicine side at all? How is it going to work?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The issue of traditional medicine has been ongoing, you know, irrespective of the development of the traditional health practitioners. As you remember, the WHO about 5 years ago sent out a statement that all countries must look at traditional medicine. And since then, a lot has been happening, like this, what you mean in the MRC, which specializes in looking at the efficacy of some traditional medicine, toxicity, and all that stuff. We have got sections in some of our university health science faculties which deal with both alternatives as well as traditional medicine. So a lot of research is ongoing in so far as the actual traditional medicine. Which is completely different from the actual practitioner. Now, the reason, the feeling was that we need to establish the council was to make sure that there is a council which overlooks all the matters around both the practitioners as well as their products, the medicine. And we work very closely together with the particular directorate. We invite them to our stakeholder consultative meetings, and they also invite us. We participate in what they do, but we make sure that we do not mix the two, because that other one is scientifically developed. This one of the practitioner is very indigenous and traditional in nature, and it is up to the practitioner, once the council is in place, to decide and to determine what will happen to the practice of traditional medicine in the future. We don't want to dictate or the process, because we do not know what traditional medicine is. It is allopathic treatment.
Thank you.
More clarification? Over to you, Dr. Mathis.
Thank you. Just to answer to everyone's question, that the honourable member asked. The short answer is that it's virtually impossible to have the two come into effect together. As Mrs. Ndalosa has explained, the scientific part, the progress part of the process has been going on for a long time. And I think it was in the middle of that we realized that in actual fact, while we are trying to regularize the product scientifically and to do more tests and things, the growing concern was that the professionals themselves, the health practitioners themselves, were completely, there was no mechanism of ascertaining who was the quack, who had undergone the apprenticeship, who was taking chances, who was making money. So we decided that while the scientific part is going on, I think the system, the practitioner system must be in some way regularized and be tidied up. And this is why this big came into effect. Now, whether or not at the end of this, there will also be some medicines that have gone through the testing in the conventional sense, that cannot be guaranteed, because they're two completely different processes. But the one thing right now is that as people get more vulnerable in terms of what's going on epidemiologically, then a lot more people are trying to take advantage of the situation. And this is what they're trying to produce. Which is why in that council, in the practitioner health council, there has been an insistence that a couple of members of that council must be practicing well-respected, well-known practitioner health practitioners, to make sure that they can assess, while they register, because they can assess those people that are registered in terms of their own framework of accessibility and accessibility. So it's unlikely. It may happen, but it is unlikely that the two will converge at some point. So it will be on the day that the networks are registered and that they begin the service of the traditional health workers of the traditional health professionals themselves are fully assisted, fully tied up to it.
Thank you. Dr. Mzalisi, if...
Yeah, I actually just wanted to say, in relation to the question of Honorable Walter, that probably maybe sometimes in future...
Honorable Walters, we are dealing with your question.
Sorry. Yeah, I have to say, maybe in future we may have the relevant directory on the medicines themselves in our briefing. But for the bills to come to effect at the same time, I think it may be a very impossible thing because you need this particular profession to be organized so that they take part in all processes that affect their profession. Now, the council must be in place so that then they can maybe all this necessary input in all methods that relate to their profession, that relate to the medicine. It definitely needs to come into effect before any other thing that affects their profession. Thanks.
Thank you. Some comments? If I may come in, on the input made by the organizations, the Spiritual Healers Group was one of those issues mentioned. I just want to find out from the department, what is your view on spiritual healers?
Honorable Chair, the issue of spiritual healers is always raised wherever we make presentations or we consult. The fact of the matter is, initially, remember when we started the whole matter of trying to organize the professional traditional healers, it was an order from Parliament. And the choice of the four people to be the ones to begin the council actually came from Parliament. That these you can deal with. But when it comes to spiritual healers, the feeling was that they are not African indigenous, they are more religious than African indigenous practitioners. Then once the council is in place, it will be up to the council to decide who else can be registered into the body of traditional health practitioners, as long as they can put criteria and so on. That's the normal function of any council, to decide who its membership is going to be. So the feeling was that from Parliament, we were told that you can't measure some of the things that are done at the spiritual level insofar as spiritual healers are concerned. Mm-hmm. They can't be compared to the indigenous, traditional mm-hmm. African practitioners who everybody virtually knows what they are.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why I don't think they are completely excluded. Given the numbers of spiritual healers in the country, there are many, many of them. But it could be up to the council to embrace them or to decide what they do with them.
In the absence of more questions, we are now... the point of thanking you, Dr. Mzalisi, for the presentation. It will give us an opportunity as the committee to deal with the issues and see how far we can go to improve the bill. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much.
The EC down lunch. What is this? At 1 o'clock in the old assembly. would like everybody to come and join us. Please, at 1 o'clock, old assembly. You are all welcome.
My apologies for lunch because I'm running in 6 places, but I hope you like that.
You'll let us know about next week.